Today on Rockin' the Suburbs!
This intro has purposely been recorded without lyrics. Wait a minute. Happy Friday, everybody. It is Patrick here. And as you know, if you've been listening this week, my usual co-host, Jim Linehan, a longtime friend and founder of the podcast, is away on what we call dad business. And I'm very lucky today to have fellow Falls Church resident Bill Mulligan live in the basement with me. Bill, you're down in Patrick's basement. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you for coming over.
And it was a beautiful day to walk over to. The first nice day we've had in a long time.
Oh my gosh, it was lovely today. It really feels like spring finally today. And just briefly, we want to tell everyone that Bill is also owner of a beagle. And he met our beagle puppy today. And that was a very sweet moment.
Yeah, makes me want to get another one.
Yeah, that's the danger. And thanks to you, Bill, very much for not only helping out, but coming up with an idea for today's show, which I think is really cool. So tell everybody kind of what the concept is.
Well, I just wanted to discuss nothing deep, nothing particularly insightful, but instrumental songs by bands that don't normally do instrumental.
Yep.
Songs.
Right. I love that.
You know, some of them are well known, some of them you might be surprised by, but I just was curious why a band decides we're going to just give the lead singer the day off and go in and record something. So,
and it's interesting, in some cases, some of the songs you're going to mention, the bands do have dedicated lead singers, right?
Oh, and, definitely. Yeah.
And you're like, well, what is it? You know, what is he doing? You know, is he going having a beer or having a smoke break or, you know, is he going to the bathroom? Like, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, think about that.
One of the ones we'll get to, apparently the lead singer, who has a reputation for being difficult, refused. He hated the song so much. He refused to participate.
Is that right?
He wouldn't play guitar. He wouldn't even be in the same room when they recorded it, but he let it appear on their album. So
I love that. Yeah. That's great.
So just to clarify the concept a little bit. Obviously, they're not instrumental bands, so no right. Low Straitjackets, nothing by The Shadows.
The Ventures, right?
Right. Yeah. Not instrumental versions of vocal songs. I'm not quite sure what to call them, just regular songs.
Yeah.
With vocals. So, like, one of my favorite songs is a version of Heartful of Soul by a Texas surf band called The Surfinks. That's not on my list because that's a vocal song.
That's right. Gotcha. Okay.
Not a reprise. They're not very common, but on ABC's Lexicon of Love, you know, it starts out with The Look of Love,
right.
Part one.
Yep.
And it ends with The Look of Love, Part four, which is an instrumental reprise. Yep. So it's just in the middle of an album, there's this song that's got basically no lyrics on it. There are some where you'll have vocalizations,
uh-huh.
You know, cha-cha
right.
Kind of noises, but no actual words.
Using the vocals as an instrument.
Right, right. So the first one on my list is by the Bangles, and that's Bitchin' Summer / Speedway. Long-time listeners may remember this song coming up. Last summer, we did Songs of Summer, and this was my pick of Songs of Summer. This was a song that they did back when they were still the Bangs. Lots of energy, and the song is just great. Lots of energy. It's a kind of a surfy type Southern California banger.
And love the fact that it's kind of two things, right? So it's Bitchin' Summer and Speedway kind of together, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
And then the second song is by the Go-Go's. This is one of those ones, though, where despite at the beginning laying out a bunch of rules, I'm not too strict because there is a part on this. It's called Surfin' and Spyin'.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this was released at the time it was recorded. It was later released on one of their greatest hits albums. At one point in the song, very faintly, someone actually says, "Surfin', spying."
Surfing and spying.
A lot of these, not all of them, a lot of these take on the tone of surf music.
Yeah,
just
interesting.
Just because almost by definition or by definition, surf music tends not to have any vocals, tends to be instrumental. Although there are exceptions to that later on.
You know, right off the top, two California bands, and I know there are a couple others on this list too. And obviously surf music had a big impact on that scene, obviously. So, well, for the Go-Go's, obviously, Belinda was late. She didn't show up. Right. They were trying to write a song. And they said, when she finally got there, just do this.
Right. Right. The next one is a surprise, a Nick Lowe song called Shake That Rat.
I don't think I've ever heard that.
The first time I encountered it was on the 30th anniversary re-release of Jesus of Cool.
Okay.
That has more of a, I don't know what the right way to describe it is. I think it may be a baritone guitar.
Oh, interesting.
Not a regular scale guitar. It's got a very deep, resonant sound to it. And it almost sounds 50-ish from the Shadows.
Oh, interesting.
50s, late, early 60s. Again, like I said, there's nothing deep about any of these songs or my relationship with any of these songs. They're just songs I like, instrumental songs I like. The next one, I mentioned the difficult lead singer who would not even be in the same room.
Yeah.
That was Sting.
Was it really?
Yes.
What a surprise.
apparently, he hated the song Behind My Camel off of Zenyatta Mandata so much that he refused to even be in the room, much less play on it.
Wow.
And apparently Stuart Copeland didn't like the song either.
Is that right?
But he consented to play drums on it because Andy Summers couldn't play the drums. So he needed a drummer for the song.
Otherwise he would have done it all himself.
Yeah. And interestingly, that album has two instrumentals on it. The second one is called The Other Way of Stopping. All right. That's kind of this situation is where I wonder, how does it come about that you get an instrumental song on a regular album by a regular band?
Yeah.
Especially when one of the members of the band is Sting, because you would think he'd be very intolerant of things that didn't fit his vision.
Right. Or feature his vocals.
Yeah. I imagine that frequently this happens because it's kind of a sop to... Whoever, if the primary songwriter or one of the primary songwriters is not a vocalist, and it's a way for them to do something that's theirs rather than something that's not going to be taken over by and associated with the lead singer.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Sting has that kind of absorbing all things to himself.
Yes.
So maybe this was just a way to keep Andy Summers happy. I don't know. But... it's interesting that their breakthrough album has a big breakthrough album has two instrumental
songs. That is very
interesting.
On it. Yeah. I don't know. I always thought of The Police too as kind of a more, at least for the new wave, slash punk scene, whatever, as a little more technically accomplished band. Cause, Andy Summers obviously is an incredible guitarist.
Oh,
he's a lot of harmonies and diminished chords, and Copeland is an amazing drummer. And Sting is very accomplished as a bass player too. It's, it almost lends itself sometimes to that, that kind of, I don't want to say virtuosity, right? I don't want to make it sound pretentious.
They
but,
definitely knew their stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. But sometimes you just get a kick out of it because you're playing it and letting the instruments, be the melody or voice kind of where the lyrics would be, And I mean, Another Way of Stopping is a really cool song that definitely you almost couldn't imagine. Well, we've all heard it a lot of times, but where would the vocals fit?
Right.
It's interesting.
And that's one. And this may be also another source of where some of these things come from. That apparently was just, I presume, primarily Andy's Summers noodling around, practicing.
Oh, interesting.
And kind of this song came out in the practice area, came out of what he was doing and developed through that way. So that may be another way that these songs come into being.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly hear enough stories about vocal songs that started out that way where the guitarist was just sitting there in the corner noodling around and the lead singer was, I think it's, it's tough getting old, forgetting things. Chinese Democracy was...
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
I think Paradise City, one of their
started
big hits.
That way. Is that right?
That Slash was downstairs just noodling around, and Axl Rose was upstairs and listening to him and started writing lyrics to what Slash was downstairs doing.
Yeah.
And they put them together, and not only did they come up with a song, but they come up with one of the biggest songs in their catalog.
Right.
But that may be another way that these things come to be. Next on my list is Flying by the Beatles.
That's a great one.
Beautiful song.
Lovely song. Totally forgotten about that one.
Similarly, Pet Sounds on Pet Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, there are so many interesting non-vocal sounds going on that whole album that maybe it almost makes sense that yep. there is a vocal-less song. But there's certainly a lot of great vocals on the album, too. So
Yeah, that's right. And that's an interesting, you know, concept as well, with Brian Wilson being so influenced by vocal groups like the Four Freshmen and the tight harmonies of the Beach Boys were always something interesting. It's so interesting they have an instrumental there.
Yeah.
But yeah, also being a surf band too. So, you know, kind of cool. Right. Yeah.
The next one on my list is one that's definitely not surfy and may be actually the most famous, at least in rock, of course, is Jessica by the Allman Brothers.
Yeah. Great tune.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody, certainly over the age of 40, has that ingrained in their brain.
Instantly recognizable, yeah.
I was a little surprised. Before I came over, I was looking at some stuff, and for about 30 years, there was actually an instrumental performance Grammy.
Really?
A rock instrumental performance Grammy. And the winner in 1996 was the Allman Brothers for
right?
Jessica. And I was looking at it and I'm thinking, what is this? Apparently they won for a re-recording of it. Or not even a re-recording. It was like a live album they did.
I see. Yeah. Well, that brings up another interesting aspect to this, Bill, too, is that take a band like the Allmans, take a band like, I'm going to say it, the Grateful Dead, you know, take a band like Fish. When they're performing such long, you know, they'll come in almost like a jazz recording, right? They'll come in, they'll set the tone and the melody, and there'll be vocals there, but then there'll be these long instrumental sections, right?
Doing their thing.
Sort of go off in different directions and may not even be all that much related to the original sound and melody, right? And then they come back to that to kind of close the song out. So that's really interesting about the Allman Brothers, but it's interesting.
Yeah, although, like you said, with them, so much of their DNA is that these long jams, extended jams, they're just so attuned to it.
Yeah, that it's kind of second nature in many ways.
One that I find very interesting is Space Invader by the Pretenders.
Okay, yeah.
If only
I
because of
about that tune.
The closeout where they have the audio from the video game.
Right. That's really interesting. Is that on the first?
Yeah, that's on Pretenders.
First Pretenders album. Yeah, that is very cool. Yeah.
And about that same time, if Jessica's not the most famous one, then this probably is Eruption.
In a band where, like Van Halen's a great example, you got a lead singer, But you've also got a guitarist who, you know, I don't know, half the people come to a Van Halen concert, they want to see David Lee Roth go crazy, right? Want to see him jump and sing, and they want to hear all the rocking tunes. But half the people, or maybe a quarter of the people, just want to see Eddie play, right? They're going to watch Eddie the whole time.
One of the greatest guitarists of all time.
Yeah, so it's makes sense that, you know, you would have a band that would... That's kind of his showpiece, right? You know, and it, and he's taken over that and doing that. So that's really cool too.
Yeah.
But you know, I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about The Who, right? One of my favorite bands, and they did a lot of instrumental stuff, but they did it at the service of Pete Townsend's vision to write an opera, right?
Right.
Or Quadrophenia and Tommy, both, you know, these big concept pieces. And so he needed links to get...
Interludes.
Yeah, to get the two sections together, right? But you would never go to a Who concert or you know, even think about Pete Townsend being like Eddie Van Halen and doing like a flashy, you know, solo or anything like that. I mean, he might play one, but it would never be a spotlight on Pete, you know, and him just showing off, you know, doing all kinds of things. So
it's
really interesting in that sense, how you could use an instrumental in a different way than just necessarily, in this case, a showpiece for the amazing guitar player.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, we could sit here forever probably and think of examples, but those were the big ones on my list. Again, nothing deep about them. I don't claim that they have any great significance other than I like them.
That's very cool. And I wanted to ask you this. As we were talking, this came to my mind. And obviously, we're starting off talking a little bit about surf music. But what is it about instrumentals that, for whatever reason, gives you a slightly lighter feel, right? You know, it's not necessarily gonna be like this heavy, like Candle in the Wind, you know, kind of intense song. And maybe some of it comes from surf music, maybe some of it comes from jazz, but I don't know, it always to me feels like it's a little more lighthearted and it's a little more fun in many cases when you have an instrumental track.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but no lyrics, you don't have to engage the rational part of your mind.
That makes sense.
You can just kind of float along, if you will, and go with wherever the music takes you.
That's a really cool point. And that's great. And you know, the one I'm thinking of too right now is there's an instrumental on The Unforgettable Fire by U2, and I can't think of the title of it right now.
July 4th, 4th of July.
And that's it. Yeah, that's it. And there might be some ambient sounds maybe, you know, floating in and out, but it's a really beautiful, and maybe it comes from Brian Eno, you know, being involved in the process or whatever, but obviously, you know, that's another vocal heavy band. Start that over. That's a band with a very prominent lead singer, but you know, also they were able to step back and have that kind of atmospheric part of it. Yeah. I don't know. And I think too, you know, when you have a lead singer up front and you're a four-piece band, you know, there's got to be those times when the three guys are just looking at each other. Like, what is this guy doing out there? Yeah. David Lee's going crazy.
Yep. Now it's our time to shine.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this is fascinating, Bill. I love it. Like you said, we could sit here and come up with examples for hours and hours. But what do you folks think? I mean, what are some songs that come to your mind in this category? And what do you like about them? Let us know, because we'd love to put together an episode of listener feedback and talk about this. You can send us an email, rock@suburbspod.com. You can find us on all the social medias, at suburbspod. Let us know. I mean, I think a great way to get in touch with us is to make a little voice memo and attach it to an email, rock@suburbspod.com. You can call the party line, and if Jim was here, we'd know the number.
It ends in 1984. Yeah, I remember that part.
612 something 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 1984. Off the right. I'm going to get a tattoo with that, Bill. I'll tell you what. If the Nats win the World Series, Bill and I will get tattoos with the phone number somewhere. But anyway, Bill, thank you so much, man, for coming over and for playing with the puppy and for helping us out with this topic. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Folks, this concludes another broadcast week of Rockin' the Suburbs. We thank you very much for listening all the time, every day. And I want to tell you guys that we've got some good stuff coming up next week. Nick Scalera and Kevin Goff are going to join us for a couple of episodes on the church next week. So you don't want to miss those. Really good conversation. And we'll have some other stuff for you. And then Jim will be back before too long. And we'll be rocking and rolling. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. Thank you for listening. I am Patrick Foster.
I'm Bill Mulligan.
And we will talk to you guys next week. Bap dap dee bap 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 b